NHPR.org/summer. I'm Rick Gamley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The numbers, New Hampshire has a lot going for it, including a low poverty rate and a large, well-educated middle class. But with those positive statistics comes an interesting problem. Our college students consistently graduate with the nation's largest levels of debt. Partly that's due to high tuition rates at our public university system, where it's often said small state subsidies have meant greater costs for students. But there's also the fact that most Granite Staters fall somewhere comfortably in the middle class, and so those who attend private schools, both in New Hampshire and outside the state, also have larger debt loads because they receive less financial aid. And because of this, students are having to make some tough decisions these days, take on the loans and accept the financial struggle, or travel a different academic path that they might not have chosen. Today in The Exchange, the second in our higher education series, A Matter of Degrees, we'll look at how students pay for college, and let's hear from you. If you're in the midst of this right now, how are you working through it? What choices are you and others around you making? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests for the hour. Tori Berube is here, Assistant Vice President of College Planning and Outreach at the New Hampshire Higher Education Assistance Foundation, often called NEAF. And Tori, it's nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Brian Gottlob, principal for Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. NEAF commissioned Brian last fall to put out a report on student debt in New Hampshire, and we'll hear more about that this hour. Brian, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Elizabeth Coyfel, director of financial aid at St. Anselm College. She's also president of the New Hampshire Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. And Elizabeth, thank you for your time. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Laura. Good morning.
Well, all of you, it's a complicated system, the web of student loans and other loans, grants, scholarships, kind of a maze we call college finance. Tori, give us your best description of this system.
It can be very complicated, actually, Laura. So we at the NEAF Network Organizations in the Center for College Planning work with students in middle school and high school and their families to start to navigate what that college admissions and financial aid process looks like, informing them. We want them to be smart consumers, so we talk to them about ways that families pay for college, helping them select schools that might be financially feasible. Not only that great academic fit, but schools that might be financially feasible for their family given their particular circumstances. So we talk to them about federal student loans. We talk to them about federal work study. We talk to them about private student loans. We talk to them about tuition payment plans. We talk with them about scholarships and grants that are available through the federal government or perhaps their institution or even from private outside scholarship sources. So we try to help them understand the path that they pick to go to college, how they can do that.
I'm guessing you get a lot of dazed looks when people first enter this process. And I'm surprised to hear you say that it starts as early as middle school.
We do. I was actually at UNH last week with 200 eighth graders from Milton, Farmington, and Pittsfield, teaching them what college looks like, what does a college campus look like, and talking to them about how families pay for college.
Brian, what do you think? You've been through this both professionally, as I said, looking at it from an economic perspective, but also as a dad.
Yeah, it's a challenge, for somebody who's studied the issue of student debt from kind of a global perspective. I've also dealt with it as a father of three daughters, and two of them have gone through college and one who's in college now. It is very difficult to navigate. It's increasingly difficult when you have more than one child. So, I sympathize with individuals. It complicates the choice of schools. It's difficult enough for students to kind of try to decide what it is they want to do with their lives, what major they want, where they want to go to school.
What part of the country, all those exciting decisions.
Exactly. So, and then you've got to layer on this complicated issue of where am I going to get the best financial aid package or any financial aid. And so when you add that up, it becomes almost overwhelming for students and parents.
How would you describe the system, Elizabeth?
I'd say that it is complicated, but I'd say that there are a lot of tools that are available to students.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of tools available in the state. I mean, the financial aid community is a ready and available resource for students. And we go out to high schools and talk to financial aid and financial aid nights, and we work with the Center for College Planning and different outreach programs. So we are continually trying to help students understand and to educate them about options, because really it's more about fit and trying to find the right fit for the student and the family. So it has to be a good academic fit. It has to be a good social fit. It has to be a good financial fit, spiritual fit. All those fits have to work.
You know, we hear, Elizabeth, that the system has changed over the past generation. For example, when the parents who are now sending their own kids to school, so 25, 30 years ago, what's the biggest change that you've seen?
In terms of the financial aid process or
yes,
in terms
the
of
system,
cost?
The system, because I've heard, for example, that there used to be more outright cash grants available. Now it's all about the loans.
Yeah, it is more loan-based, and that is really where the resources are, the predominant resources are. The federal Pell Grant has not kept pace with the costs, and that's always been a challenge. And for schools that are not able to support students with institutional resources, that becomes very tricky. And so by not keeping up with costs, that is prohibitive for some students. The fact that the state has not had a state grant in now we're going on 3 years, that's been very tricky. And I think that we are at this point 50th in the nation in terms of our support of schools. So we in New Hampshire have not been as beneficial to our students in terms of keeping pace.
Okay, a couple of things I want to follow up with you all on that. But let me also invite our listeners to join us again today in The Exchange. We're continuing our series, A Matter of Degrees, with how students and families finance higher education. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. If you're in the midst of this, paying for college right now, how are you working through it? What are some of the choices that you are having to make given the financing? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Again, the email exchange at nhpr.org. Brian, as we talk about fewer outright cash grants, you know, scholarships and so forth, Pell Grants, students have had to take on more loans, and that means when they graduate, they have more debt, and New Hampshire is number one here.
Actually, you know, the good news is we slipped to number two in the most recent.
Yeah, we seem to go back and forth.
Yeah, I think Delaware beat us out in the most recent, but it is a problem. We're consistently at about the highest level, if not the highest level. Increasingly, loan packages, financial aid packages are including higher levels of student loans. And one of the interesting facts is that there is a portion of student debt that is not even accounted for in those statistics, and that's the parent loans, parent plus loans. Those are actually the second fastest rising type of loan that's being granted for educational purposes. And that data, by the way, is not included in our student debt figures. So while we may say New Hampshire graduates students with debt of $32,000, $33,000 a year, when you factor in the increase in parent loans, it's actually higher than that. And there's one other factor, is that a higher percentage of those loans are also, that go to students, are in unsubsidized loans.
What does that mean?
Well, that means loans that while a student is in school, the government pays the interest on those loans. They're subsidized. Unsubsidized loans, while a student is in college, that interest is still accruing to them, and they will have to pay that back. So the true cost of, say, a $5,000 unsubsidized loan, because the government isn't paying the interest while they're in school, is higher. So when you make the distinction and factor in those, which is, again, not part of the official data, when you combine parent loans and the rise in unsubsidized portion of student loans, then the true amount of debt that and its rise has been greater than the published reports.
Tori, are the parent loans a relatively new thing, or have they always been there?
Parent loans, Elizabeth, to my knowledge, there has always been a parent plus loan, correct?
Yes.
Right. But what we're seeing is that, again, talking with families who might have one or two students consecutively going to college or concurrently, using PLUS loans as a way to manage that cost each year, to Brian's point, we are seeing families take out exorbitant amounts in parent PLUS loans because parents may take out the entire balance of what's left after any aid in a parent plus loan. And currently those loans are at 6.41%. Mm-hmm. And they are scheduled. We're starting to see some stuff come out of Washington that we'll talk about raising those interest rates come July 1st.
Wow, so that's not even included in that traditional,
correct,
here's the student.
Correct. So on top of the student's debt, now we're looking at parents who have the significant portion of debt as well.
Well, and as an economist, Brian, that's probably a worrying trend.
Yeah, it's a really important trend. The money that is going to those loans that parents are taking out is probably money that they're not using for other purposes. So it's an increasing portion, and it's striking at most, I think, strongly in the middle and upper classes. I've looked at data from the Federal Reserve in terms of debt levels at different levels of income, and the amount of debt taken out as a percentage of overall debt of households at the middle and upper income levels, that is for educational purposes, has risen dramatically over the last decade and decade and a half, and it's been particularly strong at the middle and upper middle income categories. Now, that's one reason why I think this issue has bubbled to the top. It's one thing when it affects, you know, lower income. It's another when it hits the middle class and upper class. Those are people who make their concerns known.
All right. We will talk more after a super short break. I want to ask you a little bit more about the whole loan situation, including those unsubsidized loans that you mentioned, Brian. And we'll start taking your questions, comments, stories, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:19. NHPR is looking at the challenges facing colleges and students with a special series. A Matter of Degrees considers falling enrollment numbers and rising debt loads and the effects it all has on the New Hampshire economy. Join us all this week for A Matter of Degrees on NHPR and at nhpr.org. This series made possible with support from the Derryfield School and EdVest in U. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electric. Tune-ups, repairs, and efficient air conditioning systems, including ductless AC for homes without ductwork. Online at justcallheritage.com. From the Woodstock Inn Station and Brewery, featuring its 170-seat function room for private parties, weddings, and other special events. WoodstockInnNH.com. And from Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, presenting Justin McKinney, stand-up comedian and New England native, performing Saturday, May 17th at 8 p.m. Tickets at ccanh.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we continue NHPR's series on higher education called A Matter of Degrees, with a look today at how families are financing college, the financing mechanisms that are available today, and the choices that people are making. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange, all one word. With me in studio, Elizabeth Coyfel, Director of Financial Aid at St. Anselm College, president of the New Hampshire Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. Also, Brian Gottlob, principal for Polycon Research, which focuses on economic and public policy issues. And Tori Berube, assistant vice president of college planning and outreach at the New Hampshire Higher Education Assistance Foundation, or NHEAF. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And all of you, let's go to our callers now. And Peter's waiting in Concord. Hi, Peter. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I want to speak on a couple of related issues to how loan money is used today. From my experience, I finished four-year degree at Keene State College, went and started teaching in New Hampshire, retired from 35 years of teaching. In the early 80s, I determined that I wanted to do a master's program. I did the maximum number of credits allowed away from the university of my choice, which was Colorado State, because it was the leader in my field. Plus, I wanted a Western flavor, if you will. Spent 2.5 years in advance saving money and went out there and finished that program with a $5,000 loan because of that kind of pulling in the belt, so to speak.
Sure.
One of the concerns is that the loans come to the students in an access account, and they can be spent on a variety of things, not just the cost of education. I'm currently working on a PhD at the Ohio State University, and I'm currently in debt for a $5,000 loan right now. But again, I have done part-time work and additional work in savings, and I've pulled in the belt. You know,
so, Peter, is your broad point that, you know, it's doable if you just tighten up a little bit and save more? Is that your point?
Very much so.
Okay.
When you look at the newer cars, and everybody's got a car payment, doesn't need to, and all the equipment. We used to go to a common television room, and everybody's got the TV and the high-end sound systems in their rooms today that we never had. And they're going on these fancy college break vacations that we never did. And those are contributing to some of the challenges that they're facing. And we've got to find a way to explain what is needed and what is wanted.
Okay, and Peter, thank you for the point. And this is something that came up yesterday. I appreciate what he's saying because it came up yesterday as we talked about why college is so expensive. But Elizabeth, it's also part of our conversation today. Peter's saying, and I've heard others say, that, you know, students today kind of want a, what did someone say yesterday, a country club experience. Mm-hmm.
There is a moment where you think about that part of the consumer experience and their expectations. And colleges have had to step up to the plate to a certain extent in order to compete. So there's a port in every pillow. That's a very expensive part of the education, so that every classroom at St. Anselm, for example, is a smart classroom. And so you, as a professor, can tune in to a lecture in Czechoslovakia because they're doing something special. That whole experience is expected, and that has a price tag that's associated with it. The other piece that he's talking, though, is about the extraneous component of living, not living like a student, but living as if you were a graduate before. And that piece of expecting that you would be able to take out excessive amounts of loan to help defray living costs, and the choice of living frugally is really what his issue is. And I speak to that when students are off campus. We're a predominantly residential college. However, you still can choose to do it more frugally than not. And that's the most important piece.
Go ahead. Yeah.
We talk with students about living like college students while they're in college so that they don't have to live like a college student when they're out of college.
Right.
But we also talk with students about there are many ways to get that college experience at a less expensive cost to them long term. So whether it be starting at a community college, maybe it's living at home for a few years and helping them, giving them some ideas to tighten their belt, as Peter referenced, so that they do get the education that they want at a price that they can afford.
So do you think Peter has a point, Tori, that part of the reason college students today are so indebted is because they want a first class instead of an economy experience?
I think that families are becoming very savvy about what that picture looks like 4 years and 6 months from now when my student leaves the campus. And I think they're getting very smart about picking things that are select, picking things that make sense for them, because they often know when we sit with students and we talk with them about your student loan debt will be with you for the next 15, 20, 30 years of your life. And parents say, my goodness, that's my mortgage. And yes, it is. So we are seeing families make smarter choices.
What do you think, Brian? So part of the issue is the financing available. And we've talked about the balance of loans and grants and lack thereof. But part of it's the financial choices people are making.
Yeah, that's actually a big part. And it's a big part of the story in New Hampshire, I think, in particular. One of the things that my study documented in looking at some of the reasons behind New Hampshire having the highest debt levels, or at least our students are, who are residents of New Hampshire, having the highest debt levels, is a big part of that is the choices that they made and they have made. New Hampshire has had, if not the highest, second or third highest percentage of our students who attend private schools, private four-year colleges, generally more expensive, likely to result in higher levels of debt upon graduation. So that choice has played a role. They also tend to attend schools in the New England region, which overall tend to be higher cost. And if they're not in New England, they're in New York or New Jersey, also very high cost. Pennsylvania, very high cost, generally schools that are higher cost, even if they're public schools, by the way. So the choices we make and the choices that New Hampshire residents make and families have played a substantial role. But I have to also say that the number one strategy I think that families and students adopt in order to reduce the cost of their education, four-year education, and to reduce their debt levels is to attend a lower-cost in-state public institution. And as my study documents, for the most part, that option just isn't available in New Hampshire.
Unlike some other states where the public university system is lower cost, New Hampshire students don't have a low cost.
They don't have a low cost option. There's even states that are relatively high cost in state public institutions. I'm thinking of the University of Vermont. I've had experience with one daughter going there. High cost, about the same as UNH. However, for in-state students, it's much more heavily subsidized, the grants that they provide them. So students can attend that relatively high-cost institution and still graduate with relatively lower levels of debt. So there's a confluence of factors in New Hampshire that really make it it's the perfect storm that contribute to higher debt levels for our students.
Well, as we talk about students in New Hampshire, the choices they're making, joining us now on the phone is Josh Sullivan. He's a junior at UNH, a communications and journalism / English major. Josh, thanks for taking time out for us. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. How's it going?
Well, you ended up transferring to UNH, from what I understand, from a public university in Massachusetts. Now, what sorts of financial decisions were a part of that overall decision about transferring to UNH?
Well, going into college as a freshman, you know, a lot of the schools I looked at were private. A lot of the schools I looked at were out of state and expensive. And upon picking one going into my freshman year, I didn't have much choice. It was really picking an in-state school and save a lot more money over the course of 4 years and hope to transfer out and, you know, end up at a better institution. And I ended up choosing UNH and their journalism program. And That part was huge. I got most of my gen eds out of the way at Bridgewater State, which is about half an hour south of Boston, and that over the course of 4 years saved me tons of money, tons of money.
Did you live at home, Josh, while you were at Bridgewater State in Massachusetts?
Say that again?
Did you live at home? Yeah.
No, I lived on campus. It was just so much cheaper to live in state than it was to go out of state.
So you did kind of what Brian Gottlob was just talking about. You chose a cheaper alternative, that in-state Massachusetts tuition, got your general education requirements out of the way, and then came where you really wanted to go, which was UNH. Is that right, Josh?
I did. It was kind of the best of both worlds. Looking back, it was definitely one of the smarter choices I could have made.
How did concerns about student debt, Josh, play into your decision about picking a major?
You know, it has a lot to do with it. I think it has a lot to do with picking a major and a lot to do with picking a school. It's a lot easier for someone who's an engineering major who's going to be making $60,000 a year right out of college to maybe pick a school with a little more that's going to put them in a little more debt. It's a lot easier to go out of state to UNH for 4 years in a row. It's a lot easier to pick the private university. Someone like myself who, you know, is a journalism major, a lot of people who are social work majors or education majors who, A, aren't guaranteed a job right out of college because of smaller job markets, and B, don't know what they're going to be making because they don't know the market's going to be like in 4 years. You know, I think it's definitely something they have to take into consideration. I know it was for me. Hopefully being a journalist and by the time I graduate, not knowing what I'll make, it wasn't worth, you know, accumulating so much debt that I couldn't pay it off.
Very interesting. How much more aware, Josh, do you think students are today about this whole sort of calculus that you just described for us that, okay, I want to major in this, not quite sure how much I'll make, so I'll choose a slightly lower cost school? I mean, I'm impressed at your awareness of this issue.
I definitely think it's a giant wake-up call once you finally get to college. I know... as far as myself is concerned, I don't think my high school nearly prepared me for that type of cost, you know, analysis. I think I was well prepared for college in an academic standpoint, but I think that's definitely something that high schools need to spend more time on and need to spend more education on is kind of educating their students on the risk and reward of picking a big name college or spending 2 years at a community college. I think spending 2 years at a community college, living at home, saving yourself money, and then picking the school of your choice is the way to go. It's much easier to get a grasp on stuff like that. I mean, I had the best of both worlds, and I do think college is more than just taking classes, which is why I think it's good to go away from home and live on campus and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're not sure what you're going to end up with for a job at the end, you know, I think that's huge. And I think, once again, that's just something that high school students don't know enough about when they're picking a college.
Well, Josh, good luck in your choice of journalism career. I can't argue with that. So good luck to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Josh Sullivan, a junior at UNH and communications and journalism / English major. Join us with your questions and comments as we talk about how students today pay for higher education. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Tori Berube, I thought it was real interesting the point he made at the end. He said, I felt prepared for college academically, coming from high school, but not financially. I thought that was real interesting.
And that's a very interesting point. So we work at the Center for College Planning in concert with the New Hampshire Student Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. We are out in high schools across the state in the fall of everybody's senior year, every public high school in the state and a ton of the private high schools across the state, where we talk about financial aid and how families pay for college. And that is a free service that we would certainly hope families would take advantage of. At the Center for College Planning, we meet with families and help them go through the application, the financial aid process. We sit with them and talk to them about the schools that are right fits based on finances. So there are some tools out there, and there are school counselors who, you know, certainly assist students as they go through the process, but I think that he makes a valid point that there are some students that might not be getting that type of help from their school counselors.
Well, here's an email that just came in from Mark, who says, I'm currently paying over $50,000 per year to put my child through music school. I'm using retirement money and loans to make the payments. I'm digging a huge hole of debt, and my child's degree will be one that has very little use acquiring a career that has any earning potential. Mark says, this is crazy, but it's what we're expected to do now. He says, I have younger children and no idea how I'll pay for them. Mark, thank you so much for that email. Wow, I'm not even sure where to begin with that, Elizabeth. I'm wondering if you hear stories like this all the time.
I do hear that story. And I think that the challenge is the expectation that you have to do it. And this is a choice. I mean, we have that kind of conversation with families all the time. You have to make the choice. And this may not be the choice that's the best choice for you. I had a mother who came in the other day who told me her husband was leaving her, told him like a week before that I had the meeting with him. And I said, this may not be the right choice for you to go to St. Anselm at this time. You've got a lot of other issues going on, and you have to think about those pieces. And so it doesn't mean the end of the world if you don't come to St. Anselm. And there are opportunities for you to join us later. So I think there are a lot
of Josh did, yeah.
Yeah, and there are a lot of ways to get to the place where you want to go. And I think it's really important.
It's a tough conversation to have, though, isn't it?
It's a very hard. It's usually tears. Every financial aid office has tissues in it. It's standard operating procedures to have them out on the table. So it's hard because their whole experience and what they want to do for their child is wrapped up in that particular choice.
So the tears aren't just for the students, they're for the parents as well.
They are.
Yeah. So, okay, here's a big question about that choice that people are having to make, as you guys describe. And Brian, I'll throw this to you first. It's often said that those in the middle income bracket struggle the most to pay for college, that the rich will be fine no matter what, that a smart, low-income student can get lots of financial aid, but that those who are neither rich nor poor have to sort of cast about, have to pull out the Kleenex and cry because they can't make that choice. How much truth is there to that picture, Brian, of sort of middle class squeeze when it comes to college?
Yeah, generally, I don't put a lot of stock when we cry tears for the middle class. But I think in this case, it really is true. And I think it really fits the narrative of what's happening in New Hampshire, where New Hampshire has a very broad middle class.
And that's a good thing.
It's a great thing. It provides a wonderful, civic asset for our state and is really a key to our success. The downside of it is that those are individuals who are kind of in the middle. They're caught in the middle class trap. And because it is such a large percentage of our student population comes from families in the middle, they fit that profile. We tend to go and enter private schools at higher levels than most states. Our students go to more private schools where, because they're in the middle, they tend to get a little bit less in aid packages. And as a result, they graduate with higher levels of debt. It is exactly a big part, I think, of the situation here in New Hampshire. And it really is a phenomenon. Although I will say, looking at the data, it is reaching upper classes more and more. Who it's not reaching probably is those upper class individuals who can go to the elite private schools, which is a whole another story where you get Dartmouth $60,000 a year, but graduating with debt levels that are half of what UNH graduates.
Because they have endowments and they can give lots of financial aid. I know you want to jump in, Tori. I'll give you a chance in just a moment. The exchange number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, Republicans control 26 state legislatures. There are efforts to add more, and what's at stake for the country? Then for this month's environmental outlook, upcoming regulations for carbon dioxide emissions from power plants. All coming up on the Ian Rehm Show.
The Ian Rehm Show is 20 minutes away here on NHPR, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Currier Museum of Art in Manchester, presenting Romare Bearden, A Black Odyssey, an alternative take on Homer from this talented African-American artist, currier.org, and from Selectwood of Portsmouth, providing contractors and homeowners with sales and advice on materials, including specialty lumber featuring doors and windows by Marvin and Integrity, selectwood.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we continue our series on higher education with a look at what it means to be college ready today. Also, we'll look at the game of admissions. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at how families are paying for college. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. And just before the break, we were talking about a dad who's putting one of his children through an expensive music school, digging all sorts of debt, isn't sure how he's going to pay for the other children of the family. And we were following up on that. Tori Berube, I could tell you wanted to jump in there. Go ahead.
One of the tools that we like to talk with families about when we meet with them and we're helping them select the schools their student's going to apply to, or perhaps where they're actually going to deposit and go, is to think about what that career is. and to know that, to take a look and to see what the outlook is for employment in that career 4 years and 6 months from now. And there is a great tool on the Bureau of Labor and Labor Statistics website from the federal government, which literally looks at the career outlook by state with starting salary and an outlook for the next 10, 15, 20 years. Fabulous, fabulous tool. We use it every day. So we encourage families that, as their student says, they might like to be an elementary school teacher in New Hampshire, to go out and to check what is the outlook for that career, what is the starting salary for that career in New Hampshire, so that they can make some sensible tools around how much might we like to spend for college, knowing what that result might be.
But you don't want to discourage somebody from being
Absolutely.
An elementary school teacher if
no.
that's their passion.
No, and that's why we always encourage families to look at a wide variety of schools and apply for financial aid, for scholarships, so that that dream can be a reality, but to really be well-informed about what their choices are.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
There's also kind of a rise in various tools, websites that look at the earnings of graduates from various colleges, and they look to translate that into a return on investment metric. And it's something that I have to say colleges and universities generally hate because they don't want to be evaluated on that.
You never know how much someone's going to make.
Right, you don't. And you don't want to evaluate a university on that perspective. But it does provide an additional metric. Look, if you're paying $60,000 or $50,000, okay, let's also take a look at what graduates on average are they're earning when they graduate. It's just another tool, and it's the kind of tool I think that is increasingly going to be used in evaluating where to attend.
Well, and I don't want to get too philosophical, Brian, in a discussion about paying for college, but, you know, again, if someone's passion is to work with small children as a teacher, you don't want to subtly encourage them to become a chemical engineer, and they get up every day of their lives and they say, God, I hate going to work.
Right.
So, you know, no, there's dollars, but there's also happiness.
There is dollars. And one of the good things is that if everybody decided they wanted to be an engineer, then the wages of elementary school teachers would rise pretty rapidly. So I'm a big believer in the labor market adjusting to accommodate those kinds of decisions.
Did you want to jump in, Elizabeth, as well on this?
Well, I think it's this idea of an investment. I mean, this idea of how do you make an investment? How do you see this as an investment? And how do you participate as a family in this full investment? And I don't think that part of the discussion was really happening when I heard the caller. I mean, what is the daughter going to be? What's her investment
in this? This is the email by the guy who's going deeply into debt. Yeah.
Or what is the family? Where are other partnerships available? So it's the school. There is outside resources. It's what is the student willing to work? And how are the different pieces going to come together so that you can look at your full family situation and address it? Because it's no good if you spend all of your money on the first two children and the third child doesn't have anything. And then you have other issues.
Well, lots of people who want to join our conversation. And to David in Moultonboro next. Oh, I think we just lost David. Sorry about that, David. Didn't get to you soon enough. Let's go next to Lori. Go ahead, Lori. You're on the air and welcome.
Yes. Hello. I've been waiting a long time and been listening to everything that you say, so my mind is somewhat reeling. Myself and my husband have been together since we met in college, so that's an exception in itself, and we have four children. I think this whole situation, if you take it as a reality-based situation, is not just a college issue, a financial issue, but it's a social issue. Things have changed. College hasn't just gotten more expensive because kids want things. It's gotten more expensive because society is setting the pace. We have a business, and we can no longer conduct our business without a cell phone because technology has made it such that there's no patience any longer, and you have to stay connected to keep your business keeping up with other people. And colleges have to do the same thing. Myself and my husband have sent both of our girls at this point in time to a local college, King State College. We have a senior who is graduating, who had to take an extra semester in order to get all of the classes because certain classes were only offered one semester at a time. We have a freshman who's there at this time, and it is very difficult finding the money to get them through school. We also have a 25-year-old son who's extremely intelligent but has decided not to continue with his education because he's completely against the consumeristic nature of our society at this point and believes that there should be more support from society helping middle-class people educate themselves. These things are passionate concerns for me because I teach my children to follow their bliss, to think about how they want to live their lives on a daily basis, because if you do go to school thinking about it as an investment and how you are going to get your return back, you might end up doing something you hate. And what good is a teacher who goes to school every day hating what they do, or an engineer going to school every day hating what they do? That's not the way we're supposed to live our lives.
Wow, Lori, lots of hard choices and a big family. Thank you so much for calling in. And Brian, she's choosing a lower cost alternative. I mean, Keene State is among the lower cost choices here in New Hampshire.
And that's been a trend across New Hampshire. I looked at data for over a 10-year period, and you can see a definite trend in New Hampshire toward more students who graduate from our high schools attending in-state public colleges. Unfortunately, as I document, it hasn't had a great impact on debt levels because our in-state institutions generally cost more and graduate students with high levels of debt as well.
Well, and I thought her point was well taken too, Tori. You know, we had a caller earlier who said part of the reason students have so much debt and they're paying so much for school is they want, you know, the amenities. But, you know, Lori makes a point that at some level, you're expected to have that cell phone or that smartphone. You can't communicate with the rest of the world because the rest of the world has one as well. So you may not want to pay for it, but you kind of have to.
I think that's a very valid point on her part, is that I think that you're seeing colleges and society, let's put it this way, I think that society does expect that the standard is a college education, and I think that for many people, figuring that out is a very difficult path.
Yeah. Well, Lori, good luck to you. Did you want to jump back in, Brian?
Yeah, just she made another good point about society. I mean, society is telling kids now they need to go to college. We know from an economic perspective it's beneficial. We've done everything to increase access, but who are we increasing access for primarily? It's individuals at lower income levels generally, people who don't have a family history of college education, college degrees, and that those people are entering in much larger numbers into our system. And of course, that's going to result in higher debt levels because those are coming from families who generally don't have the means to pay. That in the aggregate, that contributes greatly to the overall debt levels that we see.
Okay. And picking up on something you said and what our caller says, she says she's got a son, 25 years old, and I'll throw this to you, Elizabeth, you know, who's just saying, forget it. It's too expensive, and, you know, I don't want to do it. This gets to what Brian talked about. Kids are told, you got to go to college. It's going to be worth it in the long run. But I wonder how many young people are making the choice that Lori's son makes. Forget it.
I think that those who want to do something and need the skills will figure out the way. And the reality is that you limit certain choices by making that choice, you know, by not choosing to make the path happen. And I would encourage, especially now that he's 25, he's independent from a financial aid perspective, so Lori's off the hook. And so, he, you know, he's on his own, and therefore his resources are the only ones that will be looked at in that regard. So that's just another piece of the puzzle.
No, just super clarify there for me. So once he's 25, he's on his considered
20,
on his own.
24, actually.
Okay. It,
by federal definition, unless you're a ward of the court or something happened, you were emancipated minor, that kind of thing, you are considered on your own at the age of 24, and that he could go back to school and he could, if he's not a particularly high income earner, potentially would get a Pell Grant, and he could make his way in a different way, because we do have non-traditional students who go back and they're quite successful. The commitment, though, with a non-traditional student is challenged by family life and the other pieces that get in, the busyness of our lives and that sort of thing. So there's more balancing, but I would encourage him to continue to follow his bliss, as his mom said.
Well, so just to be clear, so once he's considered on his own, the assumption is not that he'll have mom and dad's resources to draw on.
Correct.
So he might get some decent financial aid, right, Tori? Because
Absolutely.
He's considered you know.
He's considered an independent student and therefore higher levels of direct loans, which is always encouraging. But the one point that she made that was interesting and that we are starting to see a trend with in our offices are students who have started college and did not complete, and now they are in debt and do not have a college degree.
So worst of both worlds.
Worst of both worlds. So, you know, again, being a smart consumer about the school and the program that you pick, complete the degree, because we are seeing that now we're starting to see folks come in without a college degree, high levels of debt.
Okay.
I would just add, though, that if he chose to go back, then his loans would be deferred. And so he could then choose to, and which is an important piece for him as an independent student. So,
all right, let's take one more call or two more if we could. And Sean is waiting in where? Hi, Sean. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I just put one daughter through college, and I have another who's a sophomore. So a little bit of experience with this recently. First daughter went to a high-end private college, $250,000. Second daughter is majoring in elementary education. So with job prospects, incomes, kind of hard to justify the high-end elite college. But what I wanted to say was that parents, children should look further afield. So I had my daughter apply to schools in the Midwest, you know, West, and she ended up getting a very handsome academic package that made it equivalent to a UNH price. Because these colleges are trying to attract a larger geographic area because as costs go up, the number of students that can afford it go down. The high school graduating classes are slowly decreasing in numbers since 2009. So these colleges need to expand their marketplace to attract more students.
Yeah,
they're
interesting.
Offering academic packages to do that.
Yeah, Sean, thank you very much. There are lower cost alternatives. It's kind of eye-opening sometimes when you look at the Midwest and the Western states.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, both public and private colleges generally are cheaper in other regions of the country than the Northeast and New England in particular. And, you know, I hate to say it because it goes against so much of the efforts in the state, but it's not bad advice to say to some recent graduate, look, go to the Midwest, go to the South, go to the West, particularly the mountain states where it tends to be very cheap. And with the cost of transportation having dropped so dramatically over the last 20 years and the cost of communications, there was a time when people stayed close to home in college. They don't need to anymore.
Although New Hampshire wants to keep its young people, Brian. This is the public policy.
Public policy perspective, we want to keep them here. From an individual family economic perspective, I can tell you, having done this calculus, that it makes sense to look elsewhere.
It's very interesting. His point is very interesting. I worked with two families yesterday, and their students have deposited at schools in Ohio and in Colorado, and had choices here in the state and chose those schools solely for financial reasons.
All right, let's take one more if we could. And Christine's calling from Concord. Hi, Christine. Go ahead. Oh, Christine, we lost you. All right, we will close out by sharing an email that came in earlier from Kayla in Laconia. Heartbreaking email. She says, I'm a 2012 graduate with more than $50,000 in student debt. Every month, my minimum payment is $300. If I pay anything less than $300, I will never be able to pay off my loans. I'm 24. I can't imagine ever being able to save enough money for a down payment on a home. Kayla says, when my mother was 24, she married my father. They bought their first starter home, so no college degree required. Over the past 2 years, I've often wished I had copied my mother's choices. How am I expected to contribute to our society with this looming debt? Brian, I'm going to turn to you again because you're our public policy guy. This is the big concern.
Oh, yeah. It's having, I think, pretty significant impacts on a lot of economic phenomena. I think it's affecting housing markets for sure. It's affecting overall consumer expenditures. So it's having a broad range of economic impacts and limiting the contributions that young people are making to our economy. It's a failure to launch kind of their careers and their life as homeowners, as in starting families, establishing households, having pretty profound ramifications.
Yeah, so let's end on a happy note, if we could, Elizabeth, because I'm wondering, you know, people are so tuned into this these days. It was great to hear from Josh, our student at UNH. What do you think the future is going to hold the next 4 or 5 years as people get a little more savvy about the costs and the ramifications?
I think that they will have to make certain choices. And, I thought it was interesting the discussion about the geographic enticement going to farther afield. And I think that there is some truth in that. There's a desire to see diversity on campus in a variety of different ways. So there's certainly a lure to do it that way. And you have to make the right choice, though. That's the piece. You have to make the right choice for the whole part of all the choices that need to be made, from the financial piece to the right program. All those pieces are really, really important. And I think that people are making choices along those lines. There's certainly this idea that the consumer can barter for their education. Doesn't really happen exactly like that, but that's certainly the way the media presents it.
All right. And some people want to be close to home.
They want to be close to home. And the reality is that more are close to home than not.
Yeah.
So,
what's the future going to look like, Tori?
I think that the way that students and families look at college will be different. I think that there will be students and families who look at community college, who look at taking concurrent classes in high school for college credit. I think there's a variety of ways that students will get a college degree. It just may be more different than what we've typically experienced.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about taking those AP courses and knocking some of those requirements out of the way before you even hit college. So that's a good point. Thank you all very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
That's fun. Thanks.
Thanks,
you.
Laura.
As part of our series this week, we're asking a question every single day, and we'd love to hear from you on these questions. For today, the question is, assuming you're not a millionaire, how would you pay for a college education? You can respond on Facebook at NH Public Radio or by sending an email to comments@nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer today was Ross Boyd. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we continue our series, A Matter of Degrees, with What Does It Mean to Be College Ready? A common complaint is that freshmen arrive without the fundamentals of writing and math. Meanwhile, the nation's top-tier schools are tougher than ever to get into, and students are playing an admissions game, figuring out the right mix of grades, extracurriculars, and experiences. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange, tomorrow morning live at 9, and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock here on NHPR, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 145 years with 7 full-service branches in Bow, Contoocook, Concord, and Nashua. TheMerrimack.com. And from Vineyard Brands, importers of La Vie Ferme wines from Famille Perrin of the Southern Rhone Valley, available in New Hampshire State liquor stores. On the web at rhone.net.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Here in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. For half a century, Democrats dominated state legislatures. Now, Republicans do. They control the legislatures in 26 of the nation's 50 states. And the odds are good that this fall, Republicans will build on the major gains they made.